Now, I am acutely aware that there are school teachers amongst us, or former school teachers among us, but I'm sure that we have what we as pupils or students perceived to have had good teachers when we were in education, and maybe not so good teachers. And also, you may have also had teachers who had authority to handle a classroom, and or maybe you felt that some of the teachers that you experienced in your learning career had power, and power maybe not in a good sense. And I remember when I was preparing for today, I was reflecting on my teachers, and I remember having one teacher, and he taught us English, and he was called Mr. Schutzer Weissmann, a real mouthful, and he was obviously of German descent. And sadly, when I was in class, I did a lot of talking, and I had detention, and the school that I went to, detention was on a Saturday morning, so you had to go into school on a Saturday and do your detention, and he made me write two essays, Silence is Golden, and another one about whether or not talking too much in class would enhance my future professional life. But I remember him because he had quite, he had authority in the classroom, and I was always intrigued by his name. And he really didn't fit in because I went to a French school, and but he was nice in the way that he dished out his authority, and I didn't feel as though he was using power to teach us. He was just using his authority and making a point of having to go to school on a Saturday morning. The humiliation was just so great. And my brother teased me for years afterwards. And so there's a difference there between power and authority. And I want to unpack that this morning in relation to this passage and Jesus's teaching. And it's into this world of teachers that our gospel lesson calls us to enter. Now, we are in the early in the ministry of Jesus in the Gospel of Mark. Mark has no birth narrative, no childhood stories. He starts his gospel with John the Baptist preparing the way for his preaching, and with the baptism of Jesus. And then he jumps immediately into Jesus calling his disciples, and then the beginning of his ministry. And that's where we are today with this passage, at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And how does it begin? How does it begin? It begins with teaching. But not just any kind of teaching. It's teaching unlike that of the scribes. It's teaching with authority. Now, what's interesting about this passage is that we don't hear about the contents of Jesus' teaching. It's almost like a Mark saying the content is just not important. In the Gospel of Mark, what makes Jesus' teaching authoritative is his person. His teaching is authoritative because of who he is. He is the Holy One of God. It's about his status, his position as the Son of God. And it's like, you know, some of the good teachers in our past, maybe we don't remember the detail, although I must admit I do remember precisely the detail that I just shared with you, but it's about remembering the authority of the person who taught us. So, the people automatically contrast Jesus' teaching with what they know, what they have experienced until then, and that's the teaching of the scribes. And unlike the scribes, the people perceive Jesus as to teach with that authority. Jesus brings something extra to the table. Jesus's person has something the scribes don't have. And you might again reflect about teachers who bring that extra to the classroom, and that is probably the reason why you remember them. So, what is that something extra? Well, look at what happens next. Jesus heals a man with an unclean spirit. And in the Gospel of Mark, there's no differentiation between Jesus' teaching and his healing. It's all part of the same package. So when the people hear Jesus teach with authority, and then they see him also heal with authority, they are astonished, astounded, amazed, because this is something new. This is not what they have experienced previously with the scribes. This teacher is different. Now, in today's world, we often use the word power and authority interchangeably. But I want to make the distinction between the two, hence the little activity that you did just now. If we peer into the world in which Jesus lived, the scribes, along with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, had the power. They were the interpreters of the law. They decided what was acceptable, what was not acceptable. They were part of the cultural power structure of the day. And this power was simply a given. But even though they may have that power, they did not necessarily have the support or confidence of the people because they lacked authority. Dictators, for example, may be powerful because they have an army behind them, but they lack genuine authority in the hearts and minds of the people. The apartheid government may have had power in South Africa for many years, sadly, but a jailed man named Nelson Mandela had the authority, even though he was behind bars for so many years. And it's a similar situation for the scribes. The scribes were often present in the Gospels as oppressors of the people who lacked a genuine understanding of the law and who possessed no understanding of grace. In other words, they're lousy teachers, but they're still powerful because of their position in society. They may be lousy teachers, but they still call the shots. I want to argue that, on the other hand, genuine authority comes not only from one's position in society, but from something that is beyond ourselves. Authority is embodied through a sense of call. Good teachers, for example, have authority their teaching is authoritative because of their God-given gifts, because God has called them to be teachers. So to have power does not necessarily mean to have authority. But of course the opposite is true as well. Just because you have authority doesn't mean that you have power. Jesus had the authority, but in the end it was the scribes and the Pharisees that had the power to call for his crucifixion. Authority, in the best sense of the word, is persuasive. And it doesn't need or does not depend on threats of force. So Jesus is different from the scribes because he is said to teach with authority. His authority comes from his Father. So he's rightly identified by the demon whom he heals as the Holy One of God. Jesus' authority comes directly from God, and it's this divine authority that we see unfold in the Gospel of Mark. It's this divine authority that is constantly being critiqued by those who are in power because they feel threatened by it. It is this divine authority that is constantly being challenged because the scribes and everyone else fear losing their power. And they're right to feel threatened and afraid because it is Jesus' divine power that ultimately trumps all worldly powers. And they will feel threatened and behave in a way to try and crush Jesus's authority. And we're given a clue about just how all-encompassing Jesus's authority is when he heals the demon-possessed man. Now, I am acutely aware that talks of spirits and demons may make us uncomfortable today. But I don't think that there is any argument that evil is still a problem. Evil exists. And we will shortly be reflecting on the Holocaust and other genocides. And if I can just share one example about evil. When I was first in practice, I advise people in police stations, and you come across all sorts of people who have allegedly done all sorts of horrible things, and some people are, you know, they'd been there before and they'd been round the block a few times, and some people were extremely vulnerable, and this was a great trauma. And I found that I could always find a sense of humanity in most people, whatever they had allegedly done. There's always a flicker of just maybe good in them. But I came across one particular man, and we were obviously, when you're in an interview room in a police station, it's a very, very small room. They do have panic buttons, obviously, but it's a very small, cooped-up room, airless room. And this man, he oozed evil, and I really, really cringed, and I really was. I wasn't worried about my own safety. There was something about him that was really evil, and it made me really shake. And after I had dealt with him, I went back to the office and said that I can't deal with this man because there's something about him that is truly awful. And I think he's the only person I ever come across in nearly 40 years of practice, and I only did criminal work for a short period of time, where I felt that there was nothing redeeming about this particular individual. So evil exists, sadly. And Jesus heals this man, and we need to view this exorcism as an example of Jesus overcoming evil in the world. And this is what astounds the people. Jesus has the authority to overcome evil. And it's still astounding today, and we need to remember to be astounded. What other authority is there that can overcome evil, eradicate it, or make it go away? We put people in prison, but that doesn't make people evil go away. And how many of us have struggled with the presence of evil in our own lives? And as I said, I struggled with this particular individual, and it really shook me for days afterwards. Normally you remain detached, well, you have to remain professionally detached, but this was just too much for me. So, do we have the authority on our own to make evil go away? No, we don't. Jesus has that authority, and with Jesus' help, we can overcome some of those situations. Now, there's an old Native American story about a chief instructing young people about the struggle within. He says to two young warriors, "It's like two dogs fighting inside of us. There's a good dog who wants to do the right thing, and there's the other dog who wants to do the wrong thing. Sometimes the good dog seems to be stronger and is winning the fight, but sometimes the bad dog is stronger and wrong in winning the fight." So the young warrior says, "Who's going to win in the end?" And the chief answers, "The one you feed." The only food available to feed the good dog within us comes from above. It comes from outside of us. It's the food of hope and grace, whose singular nutritional authority comes from God. It's the food of hope and grace whose singular nutritional authority comes from God. We do not have the power to overcome evil on our own. So this is why we begin every service of worship with a prayer of confession, which Paul led us just now. We know all too well our own capacity for evil and our own need for forgiveness. And that's why we come here today. But not only here today, in our prayer meetings, in our home group, on the Thursday evening prayer on Zoom. It's here that we are perpetually astounded by the food of hope and grace. And that's really important, that we continue to be perpetually astounded, so that we don't feel sanitized by repetition or routine. It's here that we meet the Holy One of God, who has the authority to call evil out of us, to forgive us, to transform us. And it is here that we are fed on the scriptures read, proclaimed, and taught. And it is here that we are nourished by the sacraments that make us one and transform us at the same time. And it is here, as we leave this place, that we follow the light out into the world. Amen.